On the edge of real and cyberspace, there's one place you can go.
Welcome to Nightwise.com.
Nightwise.com.
Tired of choosing between Macs, Linux, and OS X? Listen to the Nightwise.com podcast and learn how to slide from operating system to operating system using our hack tips and tweaks for cross-platform geeks. Tune tech into your way of life and let technology work for you instead of the other way around.
On the edge of real and cyberspace, there's one place you can go, and you found it. Welcome to Nightwise.com, the one and only podcast with hacks, tips, and tweaks for cross-platform geeks. Whether you're a Windows, Mac, Linux, iOS, Android, or Sun Solaris user, we have the stuff you need to tune tech into your way of life and let that technology work for you. My name's Nightwise, and for the coming 60 minutes or so, I'll be your host on this episode of the Nightwise.com podcast, KW608, Sniffing Wi-Fi with a Pineapple. For more information and the show notes, head on over to the website, www.nightwise.com, that's KNIGHTWISE.com, where you will find the links to everything we talk about on this episode and the Nightwise.com media feed. You can subscribe to this feed and get all of the Nightwise.com content. Those are the podcasts in audio and the screencasts in video delivered to your favorite podcatcher automatically, letting technology work for you. If you want to get in touch with us, you can. Feedback@nightwise.com for people who still use email. Nightwise.com/Twitter if you want to find us on Twitter. Nightwise.com/Facebook if you want to find us on Facebook. And Nightwise.com/Google+, all one word, if you want to join our community on Google+. Very cool community we have over there, by the way. You can also chat with us on our IRC channel. You can find that at Nightwise.com/IRC. Or the channel is called Nightwise.com on Freenode. We are anything, if not consistent, in promoting our stuff. Hey, guys and girls, it's great to be back behind the microphone. Welcome to KW608. It's been a while since I've done an audio episode, and the people who are subscribing to the audio-only feed have been complaining, "Where is our content?" And it's true, we've got a lot that we put out, a lot of video reviews and video blogs lately, but we have not forgotten our audio friends. And that's why today is going to be a audio interview. You know, good old radio, sitting behind the microphone, talking like this. Yeah, it's nice. Except that it's like 36 degrees in the studio, and I have opened up a couple of windows. So if you hear some ambient noise, let's call it ambient noise, those might be fans blowing or the world's most annoying little dog yapping outside. And believe me, it's not one of our dogs. It's somebody else's dog. And I'm a very poor marksman, or I would try to set a phaser to stun and shoot. But we're not going to do that. So you'll just have to bear with the little yappy dog. But that's not what we're here today for. We are here to give you some audio entertainment. And we have a great interview coming up. Privacy, they say, is dead. And a couple of weeks ago when we talked about Mumble, we talked about the incident where it is apparent that Microsoft is looking at all the links that you type inside your Skype chat window. Very true. Not a good thing, but it went a little bit further a couple of weeks later when, of course, the whole NSA scandal broke, the whole PRISM scandal broke, and it was found out that the American Secret Service, government, National Security Service, doodahs, were actually sniffing traffic right off the big pipes of the ISP and taking a look at what everybody was doing and keeping logs and tabs. Not a good thing. I mean, do we still have privacy? Do we still need privacy? Do you have things to hide? Don't you have things to hide? Should you have things to hide to have privacy? Or can you just have privacy and still not have anything to hide, but have a right to it? It's a political discussion, and we're not going to get into it. But we have a very interesting interview about a topic like that today. Think about the NSA sniffing your data in a big data center. You know, you, your data, tons of other people's data, stuff like that. Government agencies, stuff like that. Very secretive. But what if I told you that a 16-year-old kid with $99 and an eBay account is able to do the same? What if any stranger that walks by on the street could be possibly sniffing the data right off your cell phone? What if that, you know, nerdy kid in the corner of Starbucks is actually tracking what you are doing and making a log of everything you do online? What if that technology existed? Well, it does. And we have our expert, McFreeze, who's going to tell about it, who's going to tell us about it right now. So, as we say on Nightwise.com, let's get into the meat of the matter. Well, guys and girls, we are going to get into the meat of the matter today on the Nightwise.com podcast. It has been all over the news, and I must say, honestly, I've been reading a couple of books that are dangerously close to the actual situation as we are experiencing it today. I am actually currently reading Homeland, which is the sequel to Cory Doctorow's novel Little Brother. And I must say, when I read that book that was written in 2009, and I see what's in the news these days about the NSA sniffing our traffic with the whole PRISM thing, I'm actually, you know, getting pretty scared. But, you know, just think of it. The PRISM scandal, as it broke the news, is actually quite brilliant. Instead of getting into the Google data centers and the Yahoo data centers and getting court orders and tapping data from all kinds of users, from companies who said that they would keep the data of their users safe, was way too complicated for the NSA. So they decided to do it in a very simple matter. You know what? We're just going to choose the next hop. We're just going to sit in that one router right in front of the Google data centers and the Yahoo data centers and the Microsoft data centers. And we're just literally going to splice the cables and bend the light of those fiber cables off to our fiber optic receivers and sniff or duplicate the entire amount of traffic, which is actually quite brilliant and extremely scary at the same time, because what the NSA was actually stealing, or not stealing, copying, was raw light, real light pulses that went over the line. So it's pretty scary that you see that every single bit and byte, they didn't care about what kind of traffic it was, what kind of protocol it was, if it was a torrent stream, if it was SSL, they just counted ones and zeros. They went to the physical layer of the internet and spliced off the light. Now, they can basically see everything you do. They have basically a good view of the entire traffic streams that go through the internet. So, should you be worried? Well, that's a very good question. Should you be worried about Big Brother watching you? Well, if you think you should, I have one more worry for you to, you know, make sure that you don't sleep tonight. What if Little Brother would be watching you? What if a 14-year-old script kitty with an eBay account and a charged battery could actually sniff your traffic? What if that traffic could be sniffed anywhere? On the street, at the bus stop, at the coffee place, anywhere, without you even knowing it? Well, to tell us about that, we've got a guest today. And that guest is Gerion McFreeze, who is more known to the Nightwise.com community as McFreeze. And he's going to tell us about the one fruit that definitely isn't good for you. He's going to talk to us about the pineapple. Good afternoon or good evening, Gerion, welcome to Nightwise.com.
Good evening, Nightwise. I'm very glad to be here.
As you can hear, Gerion is one of the Nightwise.com guests. One of the exemptions. One of the rarities that is coming from this side of the pond. You're located in the Netherlands, right?
Yep, I'm a Dutchie.
You're a Dutchie. So we shall not pass the Dutchie on the left-hand side, although I never knew what that meant. But it's really great to have you on the show today talking about the pineapple. Now, before we're going to talk about the pineapple, please tell us, who is McFreeze?
Well, I'm a Linux user and I'm a system administrator, and which I've been for about 17 years in different fields. I've run Apple, I've run Windows networks, I've run large storage systems, and the last few years I've decided to use Linux as my main system for my private use, as a kind of a hobby. It gave me back my enjoy in playing around with computers.
So you are also kind of a slider, because you're a Windows user by day, Linux user by night. Is that how we can look at it? Or what other OSs are you on?
I've got a few Apple machines here. One is used by the kids. The other one is used by my better half. I use Windows. I've got a virtual machine Windows. I've got virtual Linux machines on my laptop. I've got a Linux server at home. I run iOS. I've got an iPhone. From work, I've got an iPad from work, and I try to combine those in my Linux use. I run my own blog, MacFreeze.nl. I've got some articles there about using my iPhone and my iPad with my Linux machine without using iTunes. A slider.
And a guest blogger, because we've had you on Nightwise.com several times. I remember that you did the article about how to get music and movies onto your iPad without iTunes, just using Linux and your iOS device. And I especially enjoyed your last podcast where you talked about your last guest blog, where you actually talked about the good old days of BBS.
Oh yeah, the 2400 baud connection buzzing away.
Fantastic. If you haven't checked out those articles, I'll put two links in the show notes, because they are absolutely worth it. I absolutely enjoyed I'm using your article about syncing iOS with Linux every day, and I absolutely enjoyed the BBS article, because quite frankly I missed that. I missed those times. I missed the BBSs, so I went straight to dial-up, and I think Netscape Communicator 4. That's when I came into cyberspace, so I'm not that old.
you know how you can tell if you're a real 90s kid?
Yeah.
If you can remember the phrase, get off the internet, I've got to use the phone.
Oh, yes. Oh, yes. I had been using dial-up for about a year, and I was lucky. We had a fax line at home, because we had a business, and I remember our clients telling me when I would I worked at my father's company for a time, so I would go out to the clients and deliver the goods, and they said, and they would look at me and they would say, have you been on the internet yesterday? Because it took me until 1 o'clock until I could fax my order. Which was, you know, client side, get off the internet because I want to fax.
It would be really troublesome if they started calling the other line to tell your dad to put you off the internet so they can deliver the fax.
They actually did that. They actually did, because the phone would ring downstairs. Now I would hear my dad, you know, they're trying to fax, you know. And then I would just, you know, I had both plugs on my room. But yeah, good old days of dial-up.
My first modem I ran when I was still living at my parents. And you know how it goes. Something is not working quite right. You've just got to test it one more time, and then it will be all right. Well, it took me about a week to connect to the first BBS. And at that time, I had a very hefty discussion with my mother, because the phone bill had quadrupled overnight. So we had some arrangements made that I should be able to pay for my own connection time.
I actually moved. When I moved out of the house, I had three things that needed to be ticked off for my new place. And the first one, there was, it shouldn't be too far away, it shouldn't be too expensive, and it needed to have broadband. And broadband was priority number one. I didn't really care if the cockroaches fell from the wall, but
who cares,
you know,
about plumbing? I need internet.
Yeah, I don't need central heating. Oh, just internet, big fat pipe. The great thing though with dial-up is that it was a one-to-one connection. To make a nice segue into our topic here. It was a one-to-one connection. It was basically a copper wire between your computer and the ISP. But what we're going to talk about today is actually something else. We have seen the advent of wireless, where you basically were set free from the wires, and you are now using a wireless shared medium between your computer, which has an antenna, and a receiver, which has an antenna. And you send bits to the receiver, and they send it towards the internet, and vice versa. It's a shared medium because everybody who's on one Wi-Fi hotspot shares the spectrum and actually receives each other's packets. That's what wireless is. Now, if wireless is encrypted, your traffic between you and the transmitter is encrypted. Nobody else can see it. But if it's not, well, then it's actually available to everybody else. We all know about war driving, about, you know, finding free hotspots and using them. But what if, like they say, you know, hackers, we are hackers, we drive around with cars, we war drive, we find your hotspot.
Well, that sounds really complicated. You could better try to get the people to get to you.
Yeah, I mean, in Russia, hotspot finds you. Yeah. to tell it in other words, we're going to talk about the pineapple. What happens basically if the hotspot war drives you? So you're going to tell us about the pineapple. For people who are completely oblivious to what it is, as I was until a couple of weeks ago when you started talking about it, and I really started getting chills. What is a pineapple trap?
A pineapple, which I'm holding in my hand, is actually an internet router based on open WRT standards. And it runs some applications. And the main application which turns it into a trap is Karma. And to go back to the basics for your ordinary Wi-Fi connection.
Yep.
Normally, you will pair your phone with your Wi-Fi connection. You exchange some keys. You've got to tip in the VPA or the VPA2 code.
Yeah, and that's the same for with your computer. You just find a hotspot, you connect to it, and if there's a WPA or a WEP key, you just enter that key, and then they're paired. And they know each other, and the next time they connect, they will say, hey, there you are, and they will exchange the keys, and you'll be connected.
Likewise, what kind of phone do you have?
I've got a Galaxy, no, not a Galaxy. Yeah, I do. I got a Samsung Galaxy Note 2 for the moment.
Okay. And can you display a list on all the known networks to your phone?
Yes, I can. I can go into the wireless settings, and you can also do that. I can also do that on my laptop, and it will actually show me all of the hotspots that I've once connected to. It remembers them.
Yeah, okay. And I have an iPhone.
Yep.
And the iPhone only displays the same list when you are truly connected to available networks. It shows the available networks and the known networks that you are connected to. But if I had mine connected to the open Wi-Fi spot in Starbucks or McDonald's, I would not be able to find it on my phone now, even though my phone knows the SSID of that network.
So you can wait. Let me just paddle back here a little bit. So your phone connects to a hotspot, one at home, one at the McDonald's, and so forth and so forth.
Yes.
Your phone remembers all of those hotspot names.
Yep.
And if it's ever been buddy-buddy with one of these hotspots, it will remember the secret handshake.
Or the non-secret handshake if you've used an open hotspot.
Okay. So on my Galaxy Note, I can see the hotspot I'm currently connected to, which is my router at home. And I can also I hope. Oh, well, thank you. Now I'm really at ease. And I can also see a list of the ones that I connected to, because that's the ones they remember. Right?
True. And what happens is, if you leave your home, it gets disconnected from your current Wi-Fi connection.
I better just leave the Wi-Fi on, because it doesn't use that much battery. It's really convenient when I get to work. It just automatically connects and stuff like that.
Everybody does.
Yeah.
Including me until a few weeks ago.
Yep.
And what happens then is your, how do you call it? Separation anxiety. That's what your phone has.
Yes, I have separation anxiety. I too have separation anxiety. Whenever I'm offline, I get jittery.
And the same thing happens to your phone. So at the moment that you get out of range of your Wi-Fi connection, your phone starts pulling in a certain interval. And it will try to find any of the connected networks from the past to see if those are available. It also scans the area to find if there are open networks or accessible networks at all.
Yep.
But it also proactively puts out the names of the SSIDs that you have been connecting to in the past.
So basically, when my phone and my laptop and anything's my phone and my iPad leave home and I leave the Wi-Fi on, they constantly go, hello, home Wi-Fi, hello, home Wi-Fi, until somebody answers.
Yeah, or hello, Starbucks Wi-Fi, McDonald's Wi-Fi, all of them.
All of them?
All of them.
So if I've connected to 10 or 10 networks over the course of time, it will scream out their names.
Yeah, I don't know if there's any order in it, but thanks to the pineapple, I've seen phones connecting to the pineapple and advertising up to 10 networks, even one that must have been from Thailand. It was a Thai's name from a hotel.
So whenever the phone connects to a network, it will say, are you home? Are you mommy? Are you daddy? Are you Starbucks? Yeah. Are you Wi-Fi? Are you McDonald's? Are you Thai hotel massage erotic entrance with happy ending here?
I don't know. Oh, hell, it was your phone.
Oh, it was my phone. Oops. Sorry. What it will do. So it will also scream those names at any Wi-Fi hotspot that I drive by, for example.
Yes, and this is where the pineapple comes in place, because it's got an installation of Ja-Sager, Karma.
Ja-Sager, German. Ja-Sager. Which means yes-sayer. Yes, yep. Yes-sayer. Yes.
And what happens is this. If I connect this device to my laptop through Ethernet, and I run a Wi-Fi connection from my laptop to an available access point.
Yeah.
So my laptop is connected to the internet.
And your pineapple is connected to your laptop.
Yep. And I run a certain script and the device is activated. It just stands there on my table. And every device which tries to connect to a SSID, it will say, okay.
So I'll drive by and I'll say, for example, my network name is Torchwood, which is really cool. So if my iPhone comes, or I don't have an iPhone, if my iOS device comes around and says, are you Torchwood?
Yep. It will say yes, exactly, yeah.
But it's not Torchwood, it's you with your evil pineapple.
Yeah, and it can keep it up to what I've seen, about 20 different SSIDs broadcasting at the same time, which it had never known. It gets the information from your phone, starts broadcasting, and tries to connect to your phone.
So it's kind of like a shapeshifter, kind of like a digital shapeshifter. It will pretend to be whoever you think it's going to be.
It's a lying little bastard. That's what it is.
Yeah, that's what it is. And why does your laptop need to be connected then?
Well, at that point, if it starts working as a router, so try this. I've tested it at an environment at work. I've got my laptop. It's connected to the internet. My laptop is its internet access.
Yeah, it's its wide area network gateway. Yeah, it's its gateway.
It's gateway. And on the device itself, there runs an application, the TCP dump.
Yeah.
And what happens is this. You walk by with your phone. Your phone tries, in a short amount of time, a few different SSIDs.
So it's always reading, Torchwood, and then I walk by you, and the thing says, yes.
Yes, and the web interface of the device, you can see the handshake coming through. And thus far, I've only used it to test it on open networks on the phone in history, a Starbucks, a McDonald's, those kind of networks.
Yeah.
Because if you've got an encrypted network.
Yeah, because I've got an encrypted network. I've got a key, and I'll tell you the key. No, I won't. But I've got a key that's kind of long. My key is a complete phrase from a song.
Okay, that's a nice key.
Yeah.
That will probably do, but that's not your problem. Your problem is that if you have ever had a connection to an open access point, be it a pineapple, or do you have a Vodafone phone which is pre-configured to connect to the open Vodafone Wi-Fi hotspots?
Oh, yeah.
Then it will shout out, Vodafone. The device will say, that's me, and it connects, and you've got internet for free.
Wait a minute. I don't have internet. I've got a connection to your pineapple, and you've got a connection to the internet.
So your phone is able to browse the internet.
Because it thinks I'm at home.
Yeah, it thinks it's got internet. It doesn't matter where it is. It doesn't matter what IP address it gets. It just gets the SSID and it thinks from, oh, well, let's start syncing. And at that point, if I've got another application running, TCP dump, the device will capture all the information your phone sends out, be it encrypted or be it not encrypted, and dumps it into a log file on the USB stick that's inserted into the device.
So hold on. Let's pedal back a little bit. I'm walking by your pineapple with my phone.
Yep.
My phone's yelling out, you know, Torchwood, and your Yasagar says, yes, that's me, thank you. We connect. My phone says, oh, I've got Wi-Fi. I'll dump the 3G connection. I'll start pushing data over here. So I'll update Facebook and I'll update Google and I'll do this and I'll do that.
Yep.
But you have got like a mini prism inside that pineapple, dumping every single bit to, I don't know, an SD card or something?
No, it's a USB stick.
Yep.
And this is, it's portable storage, so I can dump it all in there.
And meanwhile, you know, it splices off the traffic or duplicates the traffic, and the rest of the traffic goes through your laptop to the real internet.
Yep. It's the exactly the same configuration you get on a rather professional switching. Then you've got the ability to make one of the ports in the switch a monitor port from one of the other ports.
Yeah.
That for data traffic analyzation.
Okay.
Or spying on a certain connection.
That's kind of... What are you, sir? I'm a data traffic analyzer. So you're a spy. Yes, it sounds much more cooler than that. Yeah. Okay.
And what it does is it captures all the data, dumps it into a very nice TCP dump file, which you can download through the web interface on the laptop you're connecting it to. And you can open it in Wireshark. And Wireshark is a analyze capable tool to spread out all the information, what goes from where to where, what is the protocol.
But that's, I mean, come on. I walk by and perhaps 20 other people walk by and then your pineapple says, yeah, connects everybody. You got a massive amount of data. There's nothing you can do with that.
Well, with this device, I figured out that I had all my connections on my mobile devices pretty well in order, but I had forgotten to enable the encryption setting on my iPad on my private mail account. So a simple search for the protocol SMTP or IMAP and the word pass in capital gave me my own passwords for my mail account from the device.
Okay, so all the traffic that's not encrypted, you've got this massive blob of data, this TCP dump, but with Wireshark, you can actually filter that data to filter it out. You know, let's just take the data from that phone because we gave it an IP address, and we take a look at what's unencrypted, and then we go search for SMTP, and then we go search for the word password, correct?
Yeah, the command pass. And at this point, you see the handshake, and if you don't enable SSL on your mail client, it will go all in plain text.
That's true, because POP3, you know, little history lessons here, kids. Back in the days, the internet didn't need to be encrypted. When they started up the internet, back in the days of Robert Calliot, and I don't say Tim Berners-Lee because there was a Belgian involved there, there was no encryption. HTTP, there was no encryption. They were happy if it worked, leave alone that they would make it secure. What for?
Who was going to look at my data? I've got nothing to hide.
Yeah. But now all of that unencrypted data can be easily sniffed. Now, if I know my Wireshark, and I do know my Wireshark up to the point that I Googled something about it, because, you know, I can be compared in this situation with the basic 15-year-old script kiddie. Because you don't have to be a network administrator to use Wireshark. You can just download some filters off the internet and apply them and go like, okay, I've got a massive blob of data here. I want to have all of the MSN traffic or all of the unencrypted stuff are basically cut and dry filters that you can download and apply from the internet.
And it's all in plain text. You can read them from within Wireshark. You don't need anything else.
So you can, any unencrypted data, website URLs, content of websites, emails that are not encrypted, chat sessions that are not encrypted, telnet stuff, everything that doesn't have a little, you know, HTTPS is just plain text.
Yeah. Do you remember the days when Twitter was unencrypted, including the logging in?
Oh, that, crud. That would,
but by now it's all encrypted, I believe. I haven't tested it myself, but that's the easy way to get somebody's Twitter account. And would that be the Twitter account from Reuters, for example? You could tweet something about having a problem in the White House with President Obama, and Wall Street goes down.
Holy crud. So basically, if you can snag a journalist from Reuters,
yep,
get his Twitter account, you can crash Wall Street, and all you need is $100 pineapple and an internet connection and Google.
Yeah, that would be it. It goes a bit further than this. In the setup where I used it to test it,
yeah,
for an awareness training at work, I've got a laptop, I've got a Wi-Fi connection, I've got this device.
Okay.
But the device is also capable of using a 3G dongle.
Yep.
On the USB slot. And
so you don't need a laptop?
No. And the power, when you buy it from the reseller in America, you get a pineapple juice kit, which is a battery pack, which runs it for about 8 hours. And the whole thing stuck together you can put it in your coat. It's no problem. Nobody sees it.
So you can walk around with this,
yep,
in your coat.
Yep.
They will basically be able to... You can just walk through a crowd.
Yeah. Point is, whatever you do with your phone or with your mobile or tablet or laptop, you should be aware that you can never trust the connection in itself. You've got always to be able to... Every different protocol, every different client should be encrypted peer-to-peer. So if
I'm just thinking, you know, you can just walk into a busy concert or a subway or a bus stop, and there could be somebody.
Yeah,
and there could be, you know, I thought hotspot. There'll be this wanky kid with his extra antenna on his laptop. He needs an internet connection, but no, you can actually slide this into your jacket pocket and run around with it.
And then the device is so powerful that, give me an example. You come in another environment and you want to use somebody's internet connection.
Yeah.
And they say, well, this is our SSID, and you're a friend of mine, so this is the password for it.
Yep.
This device is in between, then you will tell your password to the device.
Whoa.
And you don't have any pre-connection with it. You can compare the certificates. So your phone or your laptop will say, I'm connected to the SSID you told me. I've used the password you told me. Everything is in order. At that time, the device also knows the password.
So your laptop, when it connects to a hotspot, will not only connect, but it will also offer up the key?
At the point, if it's a new connection for you,
yeah.
So you've got to type it in. It will plain text show up in the web interface on the device. Yes, I've seen that happen.
So if there's a pub and there's, you know, the SSID is on your ticket mostly or stuff like that, and there's a pineapple around, you won't see the difference between the access point of the pub and the pineapple because they both have the same name, and you'll actually give your SSID to the pineapple.
And the password, so you think you're happy. You think you have an encryption connection to an access point, but you don't.
Yeah. So, but what if you know, I've got Torchwood, the connection Torchwood that I have, doesn't have, has a WPA key. So what if I walk around and I yell, and my phone yells Torchwood? What will the pineapple do? Because I've got a WPA connection.
Yeah. So you've got a certificate on your phone.
Yeah.
At which point that if your phone yells Torchwood, the device will say, yes, I'm here. Your phone will try to connect and will sense that there's something wrong and will drop the connection.
Okay. That's good.
That's good. Yes.
But every single unencrypted hotspot, and there are a lot of them out there because nowadays you've just got this this default landing website where you have to click OK and the rest of the traffic isn't encrypted anymore.
Yep.
But every default hotspot, every McDonald's, every Starbucks you ever connected to without a WPA key
are... all open. Or if you try to connect to a new one.
Okay.
Apply the password. It will accept the password and set up some connection. And it will pass you through the device and start dumping everything.
Will the connection between you and the Yazaga actually be encrypted?
Nope.
Okay, it'll just pretend.
Yep.
Wow. But that's okay. I mean, it's not okay. It's actually pretty scary. But how much of our data these days is still unencrypted? I mean, we all got Gmail. I mean, I hope so. I mean, that's just between me, the NSA, and Google.
Yeah, that's true.
The kids, listeners, the main thing is here to keep everything we do between us, the NSA, and Google, and not us, some random script kiddie, the NSA, and Google. So it's all encrypted. I mean, what can you actually still see?
When every single application you use on your device has its own encryption in place, it starts to become less funny.
Okay.
Only what I've seen in the test scenario we used it for, I had a couple of coworkers, about 8 or 10, with mobile devices in the vicinity of the device. And later we looked at the data which was gathered. And I picked 4 complete login sessions for mail servers.
Are they still using POP3 or something?
There was one who was using 8 POP3 accounts on his phone.
Seriously?
Yes, which was all in plain text. And there were a few others who used IMAP without any problems, but didn't have the SSL button checked.
Okay, and that's all in the clear. I remember, you know, that's around the region where you live. I know this because I actually work in the region where you live. You've got an ISP there called Ons Brabantnet, and they still do default unencrypted POP3.
They do, yeah.
That is so weird.
And that's just the email. The device is capable to The device is capable to do some other things. What you can download from the interwebs is a total pre-configured fake Facebook site and a DNS spoof.
Oh, crap.
Which runs all from the USB stick.
I thought my connection to Facebook was going to be secure, but the pineapple will actually pretend to be Facebook?
Yep. Or not even locally, but will reroute you to the Facebook that the hacker has built somewhere else. Okay. Because all your DNS information for your phone or your laptop or your tablet comes from, and that's it's capable as well.
What if I type in HTTPS Facebook.com? Won't it throw up a certificate error?
Yeah, probably it will.
Okay, so that's a sign. So if you're somewhere and you type in HTTPS Facebook.com and the little lock sign becomes red, you'll have a problem. Does your client on the phone does the same thing? I mean, does it also throw up an error like something's wrong here?
Haven't tested that point yet. Good question.
Okay, good. Now, what about, you know, there's...
Although you say, well, there comes an error, but that's for somebody who has got their eyes open. If you connect on your tablet to, for example, Twitter.com.
Yeah.
And you don't get the lock which you are used to.
Yeah.
But you still get a Twitter page and you still get a login screen. What will 80 or 90% of the users do?
Type in login
name and password.
Oh, crud. And you can actually run these sites on the pineapple too?
Yeah, and put it in a bag and walk around town.
Oh, this is so scary. Now...
No, it shows the flaws in the Wi-Fi system.
And in the internet.
But our phones being so promiscuous to just connect to anything without...
They're real sluts. I mean, it's like, you've once kissed a girl and now you just call out her name all the time And the most ugly hoochies who walk up to you and say, "Yep, that's me," you'll snogger again.
Yeah, you're blind and, well,
Ick. That's a good and disturbing comparison.
And talking about disturbing,
and they will they keep your saliva and then they clone your DNA too.
Oh yeah, they will.
Okay. Oh boy.
And screw your head on the bottom on the body of a monkey.
Yep. I think that already happened. But you know, carry on.
What I find disturbing is that on my iPhone, I am not able to generate a list of all the networks I have been connected to in the past.
So and you cannot clear it.
No. So I have to do a full factory reset, just to protect myself from a loose connection I had in Starbucks or McDonald's.
This really sounds like, you know, an infomercial for sexually transmitted diseases by the sounds of it. I'm really starting to check my Wi-Fi right now to see if I can see that list and if there are any in there that are bad. So let me just check here. I'll go to settings. Bear with me. Settings. Now I'm really worried. Let me see here. Can I? Wi-Fi settings. Let's see. To see available Wi-Fi, turn on Wi-Fi. Okay, I'm turning the Wi-Fi on. So I've got my network. I've got some Telenet home spots. I've got KPN. I've got the Wi-Fi at work. Yeah, basically it is seeing all of the Wi-Fi hotspots that I've ever connected to. And I am finding one terrible flaw here in for you Belgian users, and perhaps, as you said, for your Dutch users too. What if your phone comes pre-configured to connect to the hotspots of your ISP? Here in Belgium, we have the Wi-Fi routers of most people have two SSIDs. One is their personal one, and one is their home spot one. And that one they can share out with other users from that ISP who have a login and a password, and they can actually use, you know, end users' routers on a separate VLAN as kind of a hotspot. But every hotspot has the same name. It's all Telenet home spot. So all you need to do is, you don't need to do anything. You just, you know, it will automatically call out Telenet home spot, which is a name that is very, very common here in Belgium, because every Telenet user has probably at one time or another connected to it, and you're in.
Yep.
Okay, can I remove this? No, okay. That's disturbing. I cannot remove this.
I cannot even see which Wi-Fi connections I've had on my phone. And I'm certainly not able to see what Wi-Fi connections are pre-configured on my phone.
Okay, the ones that I am not able to connect to right now, I can press them and I say forget network.
Yeah.
But the ones that I can connect to, that are in range, I can only say connect to network. So I don't have a choice.
Nope, you don't.
Whoa. Okay. Interesting. So whenever I active, the only thing I can do is turn off my Wi-Fi.
Yeah.
Okay.
That's true. I've always wondered if somewhere under the hood of my phone there's an access point pre-configured calling NSA Wi-Fi or something.
NSA Gray Van around the corner one.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it connects automatically. It might. I don't know.
Okay. Now, a lot of this traffic, the traffic that's encrypted, that's not very, that's harder to get at, right?
Yeah. If your encryption key is good enough, if the implementation of the protocol is good enough, you can trust that you have got a peer-to-peer connection with the company, the service you're trying to connect to. I'm thinking about Dropbox, Twitter, everything.
Yeah.
Yep.
A good HTTPS, SSL, or SSH connection is a good thing. A VPN connection also?
That would be brilliant. If you've got your phone configured to only use that VPN connection through whatever means, it would connect to the Yazager.
Yep.
It would build up its VPN connection.
Yep.
It would exchange the encryption keys.
Which are encrypted.
Which are encrypted. At least I would not be able to read any from that connection.
Okay, that's
not
good.
To say that nobody can, but that's not something that comes out of the box that would put you at any...
Yeah, but that's pretty advanced to say that you can only connect when you have a VPN connection. Not every mobile device can do this. Because, you know, laptops, that's okay. You can configure a lot, but a mobile device just does stuff.
Yeah.
Okay. So the traffic that is encrypted, you need to throw a brute force attack against that. If there are passwords in the clear that are hashed, you can probably throw rainbow tables at them, which are pre-configured passwords that they try, you know, brute forcing attacks. So, but I think that that is considered to be pretty safe, and a VPN is the safest.
I suppose so, yeah.
So, for those users that are going outside and are really paranoid, what are the steps that they can take to protect themselves from a pineapple?
Turn off your Wi-Fi, turn off your Bluetooth, always.
What do you mean, Bluetooth?
Bluetooth has got some connection settings as well, putting out its name.
Yeah.
If you've got visibility on, but also reconnecting to known devices. And there's no doubt in my mind that you can build the same kind of device to connect through Bluetooth.
And get all the pictures from Lindsay Lohan's smartphone.
For example, yeah.
Okay.
I think it would even be easier than this, because Bluetooth connects to your local file system for file sharing, for your address book that's on the most mobile devices all available.
Okay. Right. Nice, so huh? Turn off your Wi-Fi if possible. Throw out all of those open access points you once connected to. If you have an iPhone, you're out of luck.
Yep.
Make sure that you use as many encrypted connections as you can. If possible, if you can use a Wi-Fi, please do so. Check the locks in your browser to make sure that if you're connecting via your browser, that there's a little red lock there that says this certificate is okay. Because you can do HTTPS and it can offer up a certificate, just not the right one, but everybody just goes okay.
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 And if the DNS spoofing is all in place, and you can get a phony site.
Be very, very careful.
And one thing, Nightwise.
Yeah.
What I find the most disturbing of this whole thing is I don't need to operate my phone myself. I've got all these services. They all auto-connect, auto-sync, auto-try to find something, auto-negotiate addresses. If you just have your phone in your pocket, Wi-Fi is enabled, and you walk by, it will try to connect and it will start syncing email, calendar, and anything else.
And then you just walk out of range and you never know you've been swiped or you've been prismed or pineappled.
Yep. Pineappled.
Pineappled. That's a good one.
You won't know. You won't know. You won't ever know.
Ow. That... Yeah, I'll just call that the rectal pineapple. Wow. Rectal pineapple. It hurts.
Yeah, with the leaves up front.
Oh, boy. Okay, leaves first. A pineapple is like a gazillion pounds. It's like a gazillion dollars, right?
No, $99.
Oh, come on. And you need to be a rocket engineer to get this done, right?
No, it's got a manual and it works. The only thing I had to do was download one tiny script, connect the device, run the script, and it started operating.
And you can also just connect a 3G dongle and it will be autonomous.
Yep.
Okay. Now, we talked about pineapples. I'm really worried about this. You can even... And the one thing is that most laptops these days... can almost do the same thing when you just hook up. If you're thinking, I'll need a kit with a pineapple. No, you'll need a kit with a laptop and two network cards. One of the things that you should always try to do is go sit in Starbucks, connect to Starbucks, yank a second network card out, a wireless one, put it into your laptop, put your laptop into hotspot mode, and call the second laptop, the second SSID. Free Wi-Fi here. People will not be able to connect to the Starbucks Wi-Fi because they don't know the login or they don't have a ticket from the barista. So they'll just connect to yours. And you'll do, basically with your laptop, you can do the same thing. So you don't even need a pineapple, you just need a second Wi-Fi card.
Yep, and if you install Wireshark...
You can sniff everything that's going by.
If you've got to start it as a super user, you've got a sudo Wireshark, but at that point you can capture everything and you skip the pineapple, you just use your laptop. Totally true.
Okay, so if they don't have a pineapple and they have a laptop with a second network card, that's all they need. Or perhaps they use their only network card and they're plugged into the network. That's all they need. And people will connect to your laptop and basically you will be out of luck.
Yep. What I did not try or even looked at, but it might be possible, that the whole Jazager part of the device, the application is called Karma.
Yep.
It might just as well run on a Linux laptop. I don't know. And if you've got that, you've got a pineapple built in.
Okay. Oh. Scary, scary stuff. So you've heard it here from the source, from the man who played with it, to make sure that he understands what works and what doesn't work and what is freaking dangerous. Turn your Wi-Fi off, ladies and gentlemen and little ones, before you get pineappled in the behind, leaves first, and all of your passwords and sensitive information gets swiped. So, thank you for that sobering news that not only the NSA, but also a 14-year-old kid with an eBay account, or even just an extra $20 Wi-Fi card, can basically do this. We've got some great tips from McFries on how to protect yourself and how to look for and how to protect yourself against the pineapple trap, as we'll call it. We'll put a video in the show notes on how simply you can build your own pineapple just with your Linux laptop by adding a second network card to your Ubuntu system, but we won't show you how to sniff traffic. That you'll have to Google yourself. We're not teaching you to be evil. We're just teaching you to be aware. Now, McFries, thank you for coming on the show. Where can they find you, and where can people ask questions if they have more questions about this?
I run a blog in Dutch, which is called McFries.nl. I'm an avid visitor of Google Plus, and you can find me under the name Gerion de Vries. But I'm pretty every day in the Nightwise community on Google Plus.
That's nightwise.com/Google Plus, all one word.
And they could be hit up on Twitter. That's McFries _.
Okay, and that is at MCVRIES. So not Freeze as in Arnold Schwarzenegger in the lamest Batman movie of all times, but MCVRIES.
So, and the _. Yeah.
Okay. So just to close this off, when people say, I want to try a pineapple, I want to buy a pineapple, I want to play with it, is this legal?
That's a good question. I don't know.
Okay. Well,
I've used it only in a testing environment at work. I wouldn't dare to take it out on the streets, not for other people, but not as well for myself.
It's not ethical, and it's probably also not legal, because you're basically stealing information, right?
Yep.
And you don't have a NSA. You don't have an NSA cafeteria card.
No, I don't.
If you have an NSA cafeteria card, well.
Then everything is allowed. I mean, you just walk in and order the data.
What's that? It's a pineapple. Are you with the NSA? Yes, I'm just working from home. Okay. 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 McFries, I know that you have also found some links to the pineapple and with more information. Are you going to share those with us for those people who want to know more about the pineapple?
Oh, there's some general information available. I will get them to you so you can put them in the show notes.
Okay. And for those of you who want to know more, we've also found some great episodes of the Hack 5 podcast who talk about the pineapple and what it can do. So, McFries, thank you for coming. And, well, stay safe out there and turn your Wi-Fi off.
Well, thank you very much.
Okay. Goodbye.
Goodbye.
That was an awesome interview to do. I really, really enjoyed talking to McFries and learning all of these things about the pineapple. Next time I, you know, walk around with my phone or my laptop and I have Wi-Fi on, I used to be, you know, very trustworthy, and I would say like, yeah, cool, like, I'll just leave my Wi-Fi on, and if I find an open hotspot, I'll connect to that. And now, not really. I've taken a look at the list of all of the access points my phone and my computers remember, and have started to delete them just to be sure. And the next time I connect to an open Wi-Fi hotspot, I'll surely be using some kind of countermeasure to make sure that my traffic is encrypted. It's really scary stuff, actually. All this pineapple stuff, you never know who might be behind that that smiling open hotspot, or who might be walking around literally with a pineapple just waiting for you or your phone or your laptop to send out a call for an SSID. You know, just sitting there and happily providing connectivity, meanwhile dumping your entire traffic and analyzing it with Wireshark and looking for passwords and hijacking your online life or reading your emails. It's scary, and you can do it for $99. Scary stuff. But it's always fun to learn. There is plenty of time and opportunity to learn. We've got the interesting links to this week's show in the show notes. Make sure to check out the website, especially this week, because we have links to not only the books of Cory Doctorow, which are free, and I would surely should suggest them to you because they're a really good read, but also to links about the pineapple, about Wireshark, and about the episodes on Hack 5, where they do a special about the Wireshark, the pineapple. So, almost time to wrap up, but not before we have some community feedback. We have some feedback from Claudio Miranda. If you follow him on Facebook, this is probably the most romantic man you can reach with a broken impulse drive this side of Alpha Centauri. But he is also the co-host of the Linux Basement podcast, some podcast surely to be on your list to download. Interesting stuff there. And he talks about something we said in the previous audio podcast about Linux, BSD, Darwin, and the Mac. We have to get our facts straight, and it's a good thing we have Claudio to point that out. And after that, we have a little hardware review from our favorite hardware reviewer, who is reviewing hardware that is slider friendly while he is driving in his car. Love these audio episodes, by the way, because I used to podcast in the car. Takes me back quite a bit. So two interesting pieces of community feedback. Let's get right into those right now.
Hey Nightwise, this is Claudio Miranda from Linux Basement Podcast. Love your show. Been a listener for a little while, but as always, I'm enjoying everything you have to say about being a cross-platform geek. However, I do have issue with one of the things you said in episode 606 of Nightwise. Originally, I was coming off on you. I know I posted a Google Plus comment there saying that you were talking about Mac OS X being Linux-based and all this. But then I kind of, you challenged me to send in an audio comment, and I said, challenge accepted. So I went ahead and I listened to the episode, and yes, it wasn't you that said that. It was one of the listeners that had mentioned it in a comment to you. However, there was a section, I think it's in about 27 minutes and 15 seconds or so. As you can tell, I was looking for it. You were talking about command line scripting and writing scripts just as you do in Linux over onto the Mac side. Now, you had mentioned something about it being Linux-based. I'm assuming you were referring to the terminal and the command line shell. Now, really, this has nothing to do with Linux at all, so it's mainly just the shell that you're running. It could be Bash, it could be TCSH, which Mac OS X, I think, still has. I know it did in some of the earlier versions by default. But those are shells you can find in any Unix-like operating system. So I think there might need to be a little bit of clarification there. Yes, it's very much like what you'll see on Linux, but you can also have a bunch of other command line shells as you do in Mac OS X over on Linux, or as you can have in any of the open source BSDs. So just something to make a note of, okay? But very cool tip on the adding the dot command at the end so that it is executable in the terminal. Once again, thanks for all your episodes. Very good stuff, especially for new users who are thinking of sliding over to some other platforms. Thanks again. Bye-bye.
Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, slider guys and gals. This is Mr. Gadgets talking to you while, of course, driving in my car in Kansas City, Missouri, here to give you a slider's report on a new device that's come into my possession that you might want to know a little bit more about before you go out and purchase one for yourselves. So, our devices, we love our devices, iOS, people love the iOS platform, many do, including both their phone and their tablet, and of course, it really was the iOS-based tablet that really got us rethinking what a tablet really was and why we all needed one and wanted one, and reshaped a lot of the computer industry. And then there's people who love their Android phones. And for a while, there really wasn't an official Android tablet experience, you know, that Google really wanted you to have. Now, there were people who put out Android tablets, mind you, but as you may have heard me talk about in another podcast, in another, you know, kind of platform there over on HPR, I bought some early Android tablets before the first official, you know, Android tablet operating system came out and the first tablets along with it. And I tried to like them. I really did. And, you know, as you may have heard me talk, some of the words you would use to describe my experience with those tablets was not like, it was far from love. In fact, it would probably be words that are the exact opposite of love. But that has vastly improved. You know, ever since the Google Nexus tablets have come out, I have finally been able to tell people that I know that aren't really techies and don't really want to have to fight and poke and prod to actually get their tablet to be functional and get apps on it. I finally had something. I said, buy this and it'll just work. So, you know, people love that tablet platform. But this is not talking about either one of those. No, my friends, this is talking about that new kid on the block from one of the oldest software providers in the PC space. Yes, I'm talking about the Microsoft Windows 8 RT platform. Now, one of the things that I knew as soon as he said, and it's not that Steve Jobs wasn't wrong on things, but one of the things that I heard Steve Jobs say before his untimely demise that I knew immediately he was wrong about, at least for me, was, oh, people wouldn't really enjoy, you really need to have, you know, the full-size iPad screen, and a small-size iPad really wouldn't work for people, and they really wouldn't buy those. And I thought to myself, no, Steve, if you bought, if you built a smaller-size 7-inch iPad, I would be first in line to buy it. And lo and behold, when they came out with the iPad Mini, I was there on day one of availability and bought me one of those suckers. So, I really like that experience. I like it. I like my 7-inch, 8-inch tablet experiences now that the Androids have improved just as much as I like the larger size experiences. And so when they announced the Acer Iconia W3-810 little 8-inch version of the Windows RT tablets, I was in. After all, they don't call me Mr. Gadgets for nothing. And I ordered that, pre-ordered it last month, got word last Saturday, it's mid-July when I'm recording this, that it was on its way, and it came a whole day early on Monday for me. So I unboxed it, and here's my little bit of report of that experience. One thing I do like about this is it, in general, the Windows 8 experience seems to let me get to the full web site version of things rather than forcing me into the mobile website version. One thing that drives me crazy, both on iOS and on Android, is some of the web developers out there, the web designers, just insist on, I'm doing air quotes, I've got both hands on the wheel, but they insist on, air quote, helping me, unquote, by giving me their mobile experience. Now, Amazon, for instance, if you scroll to the bottom, you can get to the full desktop, and sometimes that's what I want to do. I don't argue with them that on the phone-sized device, I really want their mobile experience, but I've got more than enough real estate, even on the 7 or 8-inch tablet, and surely on the 10 to 11-inch range full-size tablet, I have plenty of real estate to deal with their full desktop web experience. But some of them just go out of their way, and no amount of me using alternate browsers that identify as a different browser to try to get them to do it, some of them just insist I have to use their mobile experience, and it drives me nuts. For instance, Google Plus, the apps on Google Plus wouldn't let me post links. Well, if you follow Mr. Gadgets on Google Plus, you know that I'm not maybe all that social on Google Plus, but I do post links that I think will be of interest to people who follow me there. And, you know, it's techie stuff, and you know, I don't think I over post or anything like that. Let me know. Anyway, I do like that particular aspect of it. And I went over to the Microsoft store. We have one in Kansas City, not in a very convenient place in terms of where I normally drive around town, but I made a special trip to go and see the Microsoft store and take in the whole experience, as well as see the Windows Surface kinds of tablets before they were for writer distribution at electronic shops. And so I had a little bit of experience with them. A couple of slider tips for all you slider guys and gals. One is, in the Windows 8 tiled interface, I guess it used to be called Metro, but that's not really the name anymore, there's lots of sliding from side to side. So there's lots of dragging, you know, things back and forth. It's not really a card kind of experience like CoverFlow or the Amazon Kindle. I guess the Palm OS was like that too, from what I've heard. Never actually played with one of those. But there's lots of sliding to get to the tiles that you want to see on essentially what is your start menu, which is a bunch of tiles. I think that's the right term. But also, you want to learn how you can pull from the side. Now, I figured this out on the left-hand side because there's a little visual clue kind of down in the lower left-hand corner, and that got me to thinking about pulling on that. So if I pull from the left-hand side, that's how you switch between apps that are running. So the whole multitasking thing, that works quite well. But you can also see the URLs pop up from the bottom. When you're in a browser and you've got that URL on the bottom, you can also pull down from the top. It will not show you your tabs, but that's a way to expose your tabs. Also, I didn't figure this out myself. I had to look it up, but you know, that's just me. You can pull from the right-hand side and get to settings and search and things like that. Initially, to load apps, I was actually looking up the app in Explorer and then clicking on the link there to take me to the Windows Store to be able to install the app. And I remember thinking to myself, even somebody from Redmond, Washington wouldn't think that was the experience they wanted people to have. So there was the search. And then one last tip, there's this thing called Acer Cloud that Acer has for their Windows 8 you know, experience primarily. And it's supposed to be kind of like iCloud or the Google, you know, Drive environment, where you're going to sync all your stuff up in their cloud, right? And in order to register for this, I needed to know the serial number of my device. Now, this is not anywhere on the box that I could find or anywhere on the device. I eventually got told by a young man on the video chat when I was there, because, of course, the site itself doesn't have anything about where to find the serial number either. And he told me, oh, okay, for a Windows 8 device, you search, which, of course, I knew how to do, pull from the right-hand side, and look for something called identity card. And that identity card, when you run that, will then pop up a window that has your serial number for the device so that you can register it with Acer and get access to your Acer Cloud experience. So, more on the Acer Cloud experience, as well as the whole Windows 8 literally sliding my tiles back and forth, so it really fits in with the Nightwise lifestyle. But that's all for now. I will report later on my experiences with this. And until next time we talk, be sure to remember that when you're out there, be sure to go out and do something to make something do something. Bye now.
And that was our community feedback for this week. Remember, you can also send your audio or video feedback to feedback@nightwise.com and be part of the show and be part of the nightwise.com sliders community, where you contribute to the awesome awesomeness of being a slider by offering up your own tips. We've had some great content so far, guest blogs by Matt McGraw and let me see, Jay Martinez, and this great review from Mr. Gadgets about his Windows RT tablet. Windows RT is really starting to show up on my radar here. I have gotten a Windows Phone Lumia 620 from work, so I am messing around with some Windows Phone apps. Niana is sporting a Samsung Active S Windows Phone, so it's also predominant or really visible in the house here. And a Windows RT tablet versus a Windows Pro tablet, I'm not really sure. I bashed a little bit on a Windows Pro tablet from Samsung when we went to London. They have a 10-inch 64GB Windows Pro tablet. Bashed on it a little bit because I thought it was too light, too small, not really something that was really out there. But who knows? Maybe I'm wrong. Maybe that this would be a great dockable device. Maybe Windows RT is the handicapped version, or it's just the perfect version. I don't know yet. But we are going to see a lot more of Windows Phone, Windows RT, and Windows 8 in the whole slider landscape soon. So that's about all we have time for this week on the Nightwise.com podcast. Remember, there is also a chance for you to contribute, as I said, feedback at Nightwise.com. We will be back next week with a video episode. As you can see, I've got a pretty busy life at the moment. Work's busy, and I tend to get outside and look at the sun and the stars once in a while, or at the big blue room they call outside. And that means that I'm going to slightly switch up the production schedule the coming weeks. I'm going to do one show a week. I tried to do two show weeks, but that's a little bit too much. And I want to conserve the quality of the show and not focus on quantity. Because I've been getting some complaints from people that say, hey, we can't keep up. And I've been getting some complaints from the people who subscribe to the audio feed only that they would like to see more audio content. So we're just going to switch up audio and video episodes every other week. So that's all we have time for. See you guys on the flip side next week on the video episode of the Nightwise.com podcast. Until then, make sure that you join our community on Google Plus, nightwise.com/Google+. Really nice to hang out there. We've got 271 members, and it would be so cool if we could reach 300. It's a lot of fun there, people contributing and stuff. You can contribute as a guest blogger. You can help us promote the show, share the show, share the show with your friends, send links around, tattoo the RSS feed of the show onto the forehead of your firstborn baby. Those are really geek points if you can do that. But, you know, just enjoy it as well. So that's all we have time for. See you guys on the flip side. Until then, let technology work for you instead of the other way around. And we'll be back with more hacks, tips, and tweaks for cross-platform geeks. Bye-ya.
You have been listening to the Nightwise.com podcast, the show with hacks, tips, and tweaks for cross-platform geeks. Send your feedback, questions, or start your own personal flame war by contacting us directly on feedback@nightwise.com or following us on Twitter, Facebook, or Google+. You can support the show by sharing it with your friends or writing us a nice iTunes review at www.nightwise.com/iTunes. Or, if you have some credits to spend, click the PayPal button on the Nightwise.com website to help us pay the bills. Just remember, there is real life outside cyberspace! But it's not all that important.